the Wildlife Observer Network.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Onward for Wildlife, the political podcast on Wildlife Observer Network. I'm your host, Heike James. It is November 7th, 2020, approximately noon, and Pennsylvania has been called for Vice President Joe Biden. Today we are going on word with Malcolm Kenyatta, third-generation North Philadelphian community activist and now re-elected state representative for the 181st Legislative District of Pennsylvania that included where I lived before I moved to D.C. I invited him to discuss the political reality of the Pennsylvania House, especially when it comes down to achieving bipartisan victories on wildlife conservation, like we've seen on the federal level with the Great American Outdoors Act this summer. Malcolm is a longtime friend of mine, and I look forward to him being a returning guest. In 2018, he made history as the first openly gay Black state representative in the history of the Commonwealth. He's the Democratic chair on all the committees he serves on. One of the first pieces of legislation he introduced was about establishing a Cybersecurity Innovation Commission. He is not your average state representative. But before we hear from Malcolm, let's talk about the average state representative and how important it is that we direct our advocacy for wildlife conservation in the state legislatures across the United States. According to the National Council on State Legislatures, the average legislator today is a white male baby boomer with an advanced degree. However, in 2015, there are more women and more people from racially and ethnically diverse backgrounds legislating in their respective capitals today. There is data that suggests trends of rising millennial representation across the legislatures, but most don't make their ages public. So some data for the 7,383 state legislators could be a little fuzzy. But some of the facts are fuzzy, some of the facts are fun. I do have some fun facts. Here's one. Hawaii is the only state that does not have a majority white legislative body. Also, Texas has the most lawmakers with doctorates at 8% of the full legislative body. And Arkansas has the largest portion of legislators for whom a high school diploma marks their highest level of education at 7%. Now, clearly, a look at the average state legislator nationally isn't a great picture of who's doing the work for wildlife conservation in your state. So I did some research to share some meaningful accomplishments on the state level, and I found some environmental and wildlife conservation champions recognized by the National Caucus of Environmental Legislators, NCEL, at a virtual ceremony in August. So I like to say congratulations to Representative Park Cannon of Georgia's 58th State House District. She was recognized for her leadership on advancing clean energy issues, especially prohibiting offshore drilling, as well as prioritizing environmental justice and energy equity. Also, congratulations to Representative Angelica Rubio of New Mexico's 38th State House District. She was recognized for her leadership in creating the nationally recognized Outdoor Equity Fund, and for her work on ensuring a just energy transition in New Mexico. I also want to say congratulations to some of the Environmental Achievement Awardees, Representative Rick Hansen of Minnesota's State House District 52A, recognized for his national leadership on pollinator and river protection through the Mississippi River Legislative Caucus, as well as Senator Christine Rolves of Washington's 23rd State House District, recognized for her leadership on coastal protections, working to ban toxic chemicals, prevent plastic pollution, and her conservation efforts to protect orca whales. While the birds, the bees, the fishes, and the trees are definitely better off with Biden and Harris, just on the fact that they identify with the political party that operates on the basic knowledge that climate change is a real thing and we need to do more about addressing it, there were a bunch of other names on the ballot and a lot of other positions on climate. Some are very aspirational and ambitious, and some leave more to be desired. Historic progress was made on bipartisan conservation legislation this summer, the only standalone bill that passed that wasn't COVID relief. The Great American Outdoors Act, signed into law by outgoing President Trump, provides billions of dollars to the National Park Service, Forest Service, and the Land and Water Conservation Fund through royalties from oil and gas drilling and mining on public lands. This bill helps offset the national park maintenance backlog and forest preservation with $1 billion per year for the next 10 years and provides revenue of $900 million for the Land and Water Conservation Fund for the next 10 years as well. These funds will support projects to restore coastal areas suffering from the impacts of climate change and sea level rise. Don't worry about taking notes. Just know that I mentioned it in my conversation with State Representative Kenyatta. That initial conversation took place at the beginning of October, and I want to apologize for the change in audio quality when we come back from commercial break. I'm still learning how to use a podcast. And now, a word from our sponsor. Hey everybody, welcome back to Onward for Wildlife, the political podcast on Wildlife Observer Network. I'm your host, Tyke James, and today we're going onward with Malcolm Kenyatta, third-generation North Philadelphian community activist and state representative. He is a brother of mine in solidarity and fellow North Philadelphian. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, and congratulations. I've been loving to watch the listen to the show. Looking forward to being on it, so congratulations.
Thank you, and I see that you haven't listened to an episode before, you should know that you're in the hot seat.
I feel like I live in the hot seat.
Oh, well, speaking of living in the hot seat today, could we get this conversation started with what led you to the path to Harrisburg, that hot seat that you currently sit on?
Yeah, I think I had some really good examples, right? And I think that all of our young people need good examples in their family and outside of their family. And for me, you know, part of it certainly was my grandfather, Muhammad Kenyatta, civil rights activist, ran for mayor of Philadelphia in 1975 and, you know, was just absolutely fearless. And so he died when I was really young, but his legacy and his presence and his example, really pushed me forward. And then, you know, of course, there's a story you've heard a thousand times, but, you know, as a, 11 years old, living on a block Woodstock Street, right in my district. And, you know, one day I came home and I was talking to my mom about, you know, the issues as I saw them. And I don't know exactly how my 11-year-old brain framed it, but my mom, who we lost a couple of years ago, was a tough black lady. You know, she didn't stop for a beat to like commiserate with me or like tell me it would be okay. She just said, you know, boy, if you care so much, go do something about it. And I was like, okay. And I ran for junior block captain. And that was the first time I ever got civically engaged. And it gave me this sense at a really young age that I really could make a difference. And certainly it started just on my block. But as I got older, there were other issues that sort of animated me. And that sort of belief, right, that, hey, if I see something going on, like I have a responsibility to do something about it. I can have an impact on it. And I don't have to just accept what I'm seeing as the outcome that will persist. And so that really is what drove me into it.
And driving you into it, I want to say that I was in that metaphoric car, in that I was on your campaign for your 2018 primary election for the 181st.
You've knocked on a lot of doors.
Over 5,000. I try not to. slight flex. But 2018 is also remembered as the blue wave. And I think that you are a part of this political class that goes from disaster, tragedy, to disaster, to catastrophe. And so when you talk about being in the hot seat, can you just give our listeners just a bit of a understanding of what your job is like?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough because, you know, and I've said this, and I don't say this with any glee. I've watched the Republican Party, particularly in Pennsylvania, in the House of Representatives where I serve, you know, really go from, you know, House Republican caucus to a cult. You know, there really are no more, you know, this idea that we ought to be talking about policy and having debates around a shared, you know, group of facts. We're dealing with people who, readily and continuously ignore science, who scorn any level of expertise, and who really, you know, defy imagination in terms of their willingness to ignore what I know we'll talk about a lot on this podcast, and what I know a lot of your listeners are interested in. I mean, the existential threat of climate change. And I know that I'm, you know, there are a couple of companies who are talking about, you know, space travel and commercial travel to other places. And I will tell you this, and I hope can I cuss on this podcast? Okay, good. I fucking cuss a lot, so I apologize. But like, I'm not fucking getting on a spaceship. Like, I'm not going. Like, I don't want to personally go. So from my perspective, there's no planet B, certainly not one I'm going to be a part of. And so, you know, we have a responsibility to save the planet we're on. And I would just end with this note that as someone who is a person of faith and has engaging with a lot of people who consider themselves, you know, Christian conservatives, or, you know, whatever they're calling themselves, protecting creation was one of the first tasks like God gave Adam. Like if that's your religious tradition and you, you know, believe in it in the way that I do. And so there also is a moral obligation to protect creation, but also there's an economic imperative. Some of the things we're doing right now won't work into the future. And we have to really start thinking about that future.
Absolutely. And, you know, I definitely, feel bad that, you know, this is a position that you feel with the opposing party in the majority. And that just means that the party that Malcolm just described is mostly in charge of the House. You know, when it comes down to moving legislation, they have the first and last say.
Delete mostly. They are in charge.
Mostly they are in charge. All right. But what's interesting, too, is that, you know, that blue wave that helped get you into the House, that helped get people into the U.S. House in D.C., well, mm-hmm. there has been bipartisan success on conservation legislation. Earlier this summer, we saw the Great American Outdoors Act, which has the Land and Water Conservation Fund in there, which is $900 million for outdoor recreation projects. And, you know, this week we saw that the American Conservation Enhancement Act was passed in the House unanimously. And it was passed in the Senate earlier this summer as well. And it's, you know, it's expected to be signed by the president. So it's interesting that, you know, we're seeing that on the federal level, but not on the state level. Could you describe why or how bipartisan success is possible here, but perhaps not in Pennsylvania?
Well, I think a part of it is the president on most days has no idea what he's signing. And so that's good news for us, you know, so I don't think he knew very much what was in these bills. But, you know, there are folks like, you know, Joe Cunningham out in South Carolina and others who have, you know, really promoted this, and they really are doing yeoman's work, because from my perspective, the environment really should be a bipartisan issue. And if you look at the history of conservation and, you know, huge political leaders in this movement, like Teddy Roosevelt of years past, you know, these are Republicans who used to buy into this idea. But unfortunately, you know, they've been bought stock and barrel by some of the worst interests, you know, in oil and gas. And it's one of the reasons, like, I refuse to take money from oil and gas folks, because, you know, there's an expectation that, you know, that they own you. And that is the issue with that is the issue in Harrisburg, that, you know, we have no limits in terms of contributions in Harrisburg, at least at the federal level. It was the $2,700, I believe it is. There are no limits. And the Republican Party has been led for many years by Mike Terzai, who used to be the speaker, who just resigned because he's facing an incredibly wonderful woman, Emily Skopov, who looked like she was going to beat him. And so he retired and went and took a big fat paycheck. Folks like Mike Terzai are completely funded by oil and gas, and they have really pushed this message that represents a deeply false choice, that, you know, it's either jobs or the environment, when the reality is we have to talk about a just transition. We have to talk about people's jobs. And I don't think we can minimize that. And sometimes, you know, my friends in the environmental movement, you know, minimize that and say, oh, you know, jobs, you can get a job somewhere else. But if you have people who have kids and families, they, you know, they can't miss a paycheck. We have a lot of people still living paycheck to paycheck, and they're doing this work and putting their health and safety at risk. I think about the coal miners who so many of whom have, you know, black lung disease, who never were compensated the way that they should have been for the grueling work that they're doing. And the same thing for a lot of folks who are dealing with NGLs or other things. They're getting cancer and other things at much higher rates. But folks are scared because we haven't done a good enough job, in my opinion, of laying out how that future will include the workers that are most resistant. And they're not resistant because they don't care about the environment. I think they're resistant because they care about their family. And Republicans have spent hundreds of millions of dollars scaring them into believing that anybody who supports the environment is against their job and against their family. And so I think that is why we have not had bipartisan support, because folks like Terzai have been cutting commercials and sending out ads. And even though he left, he has been funneling huge checks to Republican members and challengers.
And it's really great that you bring up the lobbyist, world, the advocacy world that has such a strong influence on legislation, on moving legislation, on campaigns. I know that the news hit yesterday that the Biden transition team has said barred lobbyists, you know, from joining, and indicated that he won't let any fossil fuel company officials on that transition team either. And, you know, is that, you think, progress in the idea of disconnecting the influence pipeline of lobbyists to elected officials? Or, you know, potentially does that bar some lobbyists who may lobby on some good issues, and maybe it bars them from having that influence on the transition team?
Well, you know what, you know, with all these things, you know, you don't want to see a bunch of waivers given out, but I know that waivers can be given out because not every lobbyist, you know, you might technically be a lobbyist. I'm not sure how you registered, but, you know, folks who are doing the great work that you're doing at Audubon and Conservation Voters, you know, a lot of them are registered as lobbyists. And these are folks, I will tell you, you know, I'm co-chair of Climate Power 2020 here in Pennsylvania, where we're trying to make sure environmental issues and really where I'm focused around environmental, you know, justice, because I don't want to have conversations about the environment. We ain't going to talk about black folks and the fact that black people are hit first and worst by our inaction on climate. But I say all that to say there are a lot of people in this movement who do this every single day, you know, you included, who, you know, sometimes I need to reach out and say, hey, explain an issue to me, you know, more deeply and thoroughly. But I will say this, and I know this might be an anathema to some of your listeners, but when it comes to climate issues, Joe Biden has really been on the forefront of this. And you can go back and look it up when he introduced his climate bill. I think he's in his early 30s when he was in the Senate. And people are like, shut up. What the hell are you talking about? Climate, you know, climate change. Introduced one of the first bills ever on this. And, you know, Secretary Kerry talks about it all the time. He and AOC, you know, came together after Biden won the nomination to really plan out and get more detailed about a bold climate agenda. But he will tell you that Joe Biden was instrumental in getting the Paris Accords done, bringing together relationships that he's built over many years, you know, as chair of foreign relations and as VP to get that done. And it matters in this way. We certainly have to deal with what's happening here in Pennsylvania. We certainly have to be engaged in our communities. But I'll tell you one person who really always inspires me is Greta. Because what she understood and her advocacy being worldwide really addresses the concern in the way that we have to address it. You know, America has to do our part, but if America does everything right, and if we do everything right and don't deal with the other big polluters like India, like China, like other developing countries that are pumping more and more CO2 into the air, like Brazil, where they're cutting down you know, the lungs of the planet in the Amazon, because they need land for farming. And also because they have a right wing extremist who's running that country. But the reality is, these issues are issues that we need to address as a planet, as a planet. And I really do believe that Joe Biden, because of the deep relationships he has, is going to pick somebody phenomenal for Secretary of State who will be able to focus on this issue with other countries, because obviously this administration has completely walked away from that. And so I say all that to say, I want to see as few or really no lobbyists in government on the transition. I want to see us address this in a really bold way. But I also know that there are some great folks who are working in environmental groups who are registered as lobbyists who you know, I would hope they would take a look at having their expertise and voice in the room.
I like your thoughts about, you know, thinking global when we're thinking about what we need to do for this issue that has a lot of buckets that need to be filled. And, you know, having and aspiring for good relationships internationally helps our conservation here mm-hmm. in the United States, because, you know, we're currently engaged in international conservation agreements and treaties that help our endangered species or help us understand, you know, indicator species and how they're a barometer for environmental conditions. When we protect them, you know, we know that we're protecting the environment as well, and that's a human need. The Migratory Bird Treaty Act is one example, because we have that with Canada, Mexico, countries in South America as well. But on the idea of thinking globally and acting locally, what is your plan to abolish spotter and lanternflies?
Oh my gosh. You know, I will tell you this. If I can figure out how to get rid of spotter and lanternflies, I'm not sure I ever have to put up another campaign sign. I think I would universally, by acclamation.
Oh man, I would hope so.
Oh my fucking God. These motherfuckers are just horrible. And my dog tried to eat one the other day. I'm like, stay away from it. We don't know what they have.
Oh man. I mean, that's an example of a conservation issue going awry. And I think that there are environmental solutions to it that connect public health and public education. And I know that in the first time that we met, our real introduction came through your public education efforts with Civic Saturdays. And as a big, big fan of Civic Saturdays, could you tell us a little bit about what that is and when is it coming back? When are you going to give the people what they want?
That's, you know, you ask the tough questions on the podcast. So this is what happened with Civic Saturdays. So Civic Saturdays was a effort by me to try to just educate people about how our government functions, because we don't do a great job of teaching civics anymore. And a lot of people, even if they got great education on it, you know, end up forgetting. And so from my perspective, there are a bunch of groups doing stuff around how to organize, how to engage, and, you know, thank God for their efforts. But I do think there is a need to help people understand how our government is structured. You know, I tell people, listen, I'm not telling you to not be angry. I just want to make sure you take the anger to the right place. You know, make sure you're not calling the federal government for a pothole or calling, you know, the state person for, you know, for zoning issues, right? Because the state has no issues, you know, no control over zoning. Or calling city council to talk about something that's in the bellywick of the state. I think it's critical that we really educate people about how these systems work, and they're complicated. And it takes us doing something to understand and to unpack these issues. But I think it's worth the investment. And so I was doing that on Saturdays. I think we're doing like once or twice a month. And when I got elected, I mean, I tell you, it is a lot of work. I'm not complaining. I'm happy to do it, but it has meant that Civic Saturdays has not been, you know, something I've been able to do, because it would take me a long time to put together these PowerPoints and everything. But I'll tell you this: in Civic Saturdays, I played a lot of videos from Schoolhouse Rock and from other things. And so, you know, if you like Schoolhouse Rock as much as I do, go on YouTube, get some Schoolhouse Rock, learn how a bill comes along, and some other important things.
Oh, wow. I'm sure they really appreciate that free promo. I want to...
I'm going
to
send them an invoice. I'm like,
I mean, well, I would say if that's the case, you know, is there anything else you'd like to promote? I can think of something that rhymes with promote that'd be worth mentioning. That,
you know, I will say this, and I know you've heard me say it. If you care about what's happening at the, if you care about environmental issues, folks really need to be focusing on what's happening at the state level. And so you have the Pennsylvania House Democratic Campaign Committee, their PAHDCC.com. I would really encourage people to go there to figure out how you can get plugged in with campaigns that we really need to win, seats we really need to win, and people can text no matter, you know, where they are in the country, particularly if you have people who are, you know, in seats where there's not a competition and, you know, you're kind of looking for other ways to get involved. Because here's the truth. Every issue that we face is not going to be solved in the Oval Office. So many of the issues we face are going to be debated right in state houses, but we so often put them on the back burner and make them as if they're some, you know, secondary thing. You know, our founders didn't always get it right. You know, many of them debated the role and the impact of local government. We have a system of federalism, and there's so many powers that are still with your state and local folks that impact your daily life. I mean, I think about the fact, and it just pisses me off to no end. You know, we've been trying to get a plastic bag ban, and the Republicans passed the ban on having a ban, which is like ridiculous, because in Philadelphia, they passed the plastic bag ban. And then Republicans came and said, we're going to ban your ban. And so, you know, there's nothing any president could do about that. But that's something that matters. And that's one example.
And, you know, what you explained, I like explaining as the equivalent of playing Uno with someone. You play a skip and then they play a skip. So it's like, no, you can't play a skip on my skip. You're skipped. Like, you can't do
that. I don't know. I think we disagree there. You can skip on a skip if you've got a skip.
No, you can't. That doesn't make
you
sense.
You can always skip on a skip.
You
it's like
lose
the draw four. I can hit you with the draw four
anything. No, yeah, you can definitely do a draw four back. I believe in stacks. I have a strong stack agenda in this household. Very progressive.
Okay, well, I would like your listeners to weigh in and tweet at you and tell you that you're wrong about the skip on the skip.
I'm glad you want them to tell me that I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure they're not going to tell me anything new. And that's totally okay, because I've been a student of the obvious since day one. And, you know, since meeting you, I don't even know how many years ago now. It's crazy to see where we're at. Yeah, it's crazy to see where we're at. But, you know, this is actually all the time that we have, Malcolm. I want to thank you for your time and for your championship of environmental issues in the Pennsylvania House. You know, I know this won't be the last time we're talking, so I'm looking forward to the next time. And, you know, Pennsylvania is a fun state. You know, I hear it's a fun state. There's a lot of moving pieces, so...
Well, I just want to thank you again, Techie, for what you're doing. I love this, and you know, come back anytime.
All right, I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
All right, my friend, take care.
This episode is sponsored by our patrons on Patreon and our monthly supporters on Anchor. Wildlife Observer Network is a wildlife media project I started with some friends from Philly. On the network, we create podcasts, videos, blogs, and more. Go to wildlifeobservernetwork.com to check out more of our content. We look forward to enhancing what we currently do and expanding to other forms of wildlife content from our network of contributors. You can push this progress further by becoming a Patreon supporter today, with membership starting at only $1. Any contribution means a lot. So leave a comment, and don't forget to rate us so we're easier to find. I'm Tyke James, and thank you for listening to One Word for Wildlife. Be well.